Welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, back in the Hertz bunker. I've manacled myself to the desk just to kind of simulate an even deeper lockdown, but there's probably no need for it. But if you hear chains rattling, that's me.
It sounds like you're simulating Alex Navalny's confinement in a Russian prison to me, but...
Absolutely not, especially with the added COVID level, possibly, maybe, but...
Yeah, that's someone we should talk about at some point. Mm-hmm. He's not having a good time in Russia. Not that if you're anti-Putin, you really can, but he's having a rough time of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that went dark fast. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, but this week, though, it is just the news, including the Derek Chauvin trial. He's the officer accused of killing George Floyd. And it seems like things are going well for the prosecution, but is this going to be a case where the blue wall holds? We will see. And then, speaking of misconduct, the federal government is struggling with allegations of gross misconduct in the highest levels of the Canadian forces, but are we properly equipped to address it? And finally, the tale of Matt Gaetz, a human frat paddle who's potentially living up to his reputation as the worst person in Washington. He will be the subject of a very special Schadenfreude segment of the show. But first, nothing Schadenfreude about this is we are back. Although I think we said this last week, we're going back into lockdown, and it turned out to be like faux lockdown, I guess, like semi-lockdown.
Flockdown.
Lockdown-esque,
I think I described it as, right?
I think, yeah, and that's how it feels. We are now, like, really in lockdown. We are in super-duper lockdown. And last afternoon, about 45 minutes late, they were scheduled to start at 2. They started at about 2:45. Doug Ford announced that stay-at-home orders in effect, state of emergencies in effect, and Walmart has to block off all aisles that do not carry essential goods, so no more buying Blu-rays or power tools or clothes or shoes. And I know one Walmart co-manager that was not happy to receive that announcement late yesterday afternoon.
Get the partitions out of the back.
Partitions.
It's like the old, people that remember the old Sunday shopping days. They used to do that kind of block off aisles, and then they would send usually a young child around the partitions to get what was needed. And there was occasions where I was that young child, but
partitions, it's like rope and like that, the big rolls
police
of
tape, right?
Yeah. It's rope. It's police tape. And those big rolls of like shrink wrap that they have for like skids. I saw one picture of like them parking like a skid of toilet paper in front of the entrance to a shoe aisle. It's just, it's probably ravaged
like March 2020, right? It's like, I need that.
Right. It's, you know, the old trick, you know, you put the display out if you want to move something. But I think it's all super ad hoc because it all came about at, you know, 3 p.m. yesterday. Walmart stores are open like 7 to 11. So, you know, there was, I think a lot of people wanted that because, I mean, there was this friction between small business, not essential small businesses who were perhaps rightly pointing out that Walmart could sell non-essential goods, even though they were classified as supposed to be focusing on essential goods. But at the same time, this is a big pain in the butt to the workers who, I mean, the whole point of this is we're trying to protect the essential workers. And, you know, they've had to scramble the last 24 hours to get this set up. And it's going to be a pain in the butt for them to police in store. Mm-hmm. If like, you know, somebody goes under the wire to buy some shoe polish and then having to argue with this poor person who makes minimum wage about why shoe polish should be considered essential in this instance or whatever. And it's I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, at the end of the day, though, does this address the core problem? I don't think it does, and I think that's been the opinion of a lot of people so far.
Yeah, the battle royal continues between big boxes and small business, of course. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people going to bat for the small businesses, and rightly so. A lot of them are going to pivot, which is the word, one of the 10 words, I guess, of the COVID era, to curbside pickup. So back to the way it was for about a month. Yeah, the question as to whether the keeping the big box places open, partitioned off or not, is fair or not. I don't think we're going to be able to sort that out until it's probably over. But the recommendations from public health pretty much indicate, like, just don't. If you don't have to do it, don't do it. And of course, that includes the things that always seem to be brought to the fore, and I don't know why, is hair salons and gyms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those
mm-hmm.
seem to be the two that are always put forward as to my small business. I don't know why I have to close. I'm following all the rules, this and that. I'm going to, even though we're for the most part talking about Ontario, I'm going to point to Quebec because we talked about this guy, or I did at least a couple of weeks ago, the guy running the gym and to whom the mayor of Quebec City said, nice one, champ, or bravo, champion. You've got nice biceps, but everybody's sick. Well, that gym is responsible for, last I saw, 419 cases, 36 different workplace outbreaks, and 225 cases in addition to the cases that have just come out from the gym. So why do we have to close gyms? That is exactly why. Excuse me. He said he was following all the regulations. I followed all the rules. If you're following all of the rules and that's happening, there is a problem, right? So mm-hmm. it's definitely unfortunate about your business, 100%. But if we don't lock that down, and its variants, and they're out in the community, and they're in other workplaces, spreading amongst all of us, and 40-year-old in perfect health, presumably or supposedly in perfect health, one of these cases died this week.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do a bunch of people have COVID, somebody is dead because of this gym. So what do we do? Do we leave it, do reasonable people leave that open or want to leave that open? It's the same with that church in Alberta that would not listen, Grace Life or whatever it's called, that now has mm-hmm. a hoarding around it because mm-hmm. they would not listen and people are getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to point to the Constitution and all of this stuff that the anti-maskers and anti-lockdown people point to. People are sick. People are dying. Younger people are ending up in ICUs and emergency wards. And Ontario is completely maxed out right now. That's not made up. That is actually happening. Mm-hmm. And you want to go to church, right? It's like, no, in my opinion, right? But I think my opinion, and probably yours, mm-hmm. Follows along with the majority of sane people in all of this, is like, this needs to happen along with all the other measures and wider vaccinations, which sounds like it's going to start happening on a wider berth, or we're still going to be in this zone. It's a year now. It's a mm-hmm. year, right?
Well, the core problem is that we're telling people to lock down, but there's practically no support. And I mean, that's even right down to like the individual workers. And that comes down to the rather combative segment of yesterday's announcement, which, Doug Ford says, before we get to questions, I just want to say sick days, nobody ask about it because we got this federal program that nobody's using. And, I saw somebody post.
That's very good, by the way. Solid. 10 out of 10.
I saw somebody post a meme where it's like Doug Ford, and it says, before we take questions, I'd like to take a moment to tell the tell the NDP to go F itself. Which basically, because all the opposition parties have been hammering Ford for that, and understandably so. And when he goes on about there's this federal program, it's like, dude, you think there's $750,000 sitting there for sick leave because nobody knows about it? No, it's because it's a spectacularly crappy program that doesn't pay you your full wage, even a minimum wage. It's capped at like $500 a week. If you get sick on a Monday and you are sick for like 3 days, you have to wait till the next Monday before you can apply, because they pay out per week. You have to have missed at least half your scheduled work hours. You need to provide like the supplementary documentation, and if it's not satisfactory, you can be refused. And on the website, it says 3 to 5 days to receive the money direct deposit. Could be as high as 2 weeks if you don't have direct deposit. And it's hard to believe, but there are a lot of people, particularly low wage workers, who are not set up on direct deposit. And there have been reports that it takes like 3 to 4 weeks to get this check, and we're talking about people who live hand to mouth. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's like 8 different reasons why this federal program isn't working, as opposed to just, you know, setting it up at the provincial level and making sure that if you are sick and you need to take a day, maybe to get a COVID test to make sure you don't have COVID, that's not available to you. In the meantime, you're losing a day's pay. You don't know if you'll get this federal money or not. And we've even seen that locally with provincial money, with our friends at Royal CAD Records unable to access emergency funds. So, I mean, these systems are not perfect. And here's Doug Ford saying, hey, these imperfect systems, why aren't you using them instead of complaining at me? And in so much as we can't blame Ford exclusively for the position we're in, he has had the appearance in the last few days of a man who's sick and tired of dealing with this. And I can't say that I blame him, but he's the premier of the province and he kind of has to be above that now. Like, this is the time where that separates the proverbial men from the boys, so to speak. And I don't think he has been successful at proving his mantle. That was a Freudian slip, but it's just like, this is like the real time, you know, we're
time
tired.
To shine should be.
Yeah, we're tired. We're fed up. We're so close to the end. We see light at the end of the tunnel. People are getting fed up. They're ready to cash out. And this is the time that we need like real leadership. And it seems like even the premier, is not terribly interested in leading right now.
Well, at least they've stopped blaming the Wynn McGinty liberals for everything. Like that's too far in the past now. But this seems to be how they roll. When I say they, I mean the party in general, but Ford in particular, mm-hmm. where it's always somebody else or something else. A good an example was also part of this press conference was the schools are the safest place to be on the crawl. And then below it, it's like Toronto schools are closing. Mm-hmm. Today, like as this press conference is going on, Toronto schools are like, nope, we need to shut this down. There's been some fudging of the percentages where Ford was, I can't remember his exact number, was like 99.9% of the schools are fine. But if every school's got a case and then you add that up, it's actually more like 33% of schools have cases. People are sick. You need to shut it down. Peel schools did the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Following suit, and then within that same range, the schools up this way as well, up here in Guelph, are like, no, we're gonna close them down as well. What is it called? Section 22?
Mm-hmm.
It's something like that. It's like, let's shut the schools down. They're going to be off next week anyway for the postponed March break. Then, of course, there's talk now of vaccinating the teachers. But I would say the hate on that the provincial government that they don't hide for the teachers is probably going to pivot as well to doctors now, because almost every doctor that's vocal in the province is saying you need to vaccinate the people that are frontline, which is everything from the warehouse workers, people in the supermarkets, but also teachers. And of course, because some of that being vocal about it is coming from the teachers and the teachers unions, they want to take a shot at the teachers unions because they hate them. They hate them that much. And it's like, rather than, you know, this is where the cases are, kids are getting it, it's going back and forth in the community. If you can vaccinate anybody, whether it's the teachers or the cleaners or anybody that sets foot in that school, the assistants, whatever's going on, vaccinate all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go down. And then you can say with certainty that schools are the safest. It's good to keep kids in school, but if they're not safe, it's near pointless. It's the same with the gym. You know, when you see these places, if they can't nail that down, all the medical community are saying this is just going to keep going. And who is the triple threat? It was DeVille in Toronto, Lowe out of Peel, who both shut the schools as well, and Vera Etches out of Ottawa, which is another hot zone, wrote that letter, which I think was backed by a bunch, saying you need to do these things or COVID is going to keep. And they keep referring to it now as like this. Treating the variants is a completely different pandemic because it's morphed that much. It's like super strong. It's not just, what are they calling it? COVID-1 is now called wild COVID, which I thought was odd, but it's like, this is the COVID that came to us, but now it's morphed into something different. It's more virulent. They can't say with a certainty that you're not getting it off the doorknobs now. Like it's just, if that is in the zone, a la the gym example from Quebec, people are going to, it's just going to, like a wildfire. What did Ford call it? You got to throw a bucket of water on the inferno or whatever. It's like, oh, you need like all the hoses on the inferno, or it's just going to keep on burning.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, the reasons why you vaccinated all the people in long-term care homes and people over 80 versus, that's the people who were dying. Those were the people who are getting killed.
And they're not now.
And they're not now because they're fully vaccinated. So, where do you direct it now? Well, you direct it to the places where there are outbreaks, large congregate settings, meatpacking places, large warehouses like Amazon, schools, like target
colleges and universities.
Yeah, target the vaccine.
Yeah,
exactly. To where it is, instead of, you know, following this, like, okay, now we're going to do over 70s, now we're going to do over 65s. It's like, yeah, okay, I understand that was the plan, but that's not where the virus is now, and we have to be nimble and adapt. We'll have to leave that there, though, and head a little to the south, to Minneapolis, where Derek Chauvin, the police officer accused of killing George Floyd. He is currently on trial. I believe it is day 9 of the trial. It is kind of we're kind of in a long plateau now. The prosecution first had on the stand witnesses and George Floyd's sort of immediate family, his girlfriend, trying to paint a picture of him. We are now kind of in the, I'm going to call it the CSI phase of the trial because they're talking about evidence. They're talking about the medical examiner's report, reports about how he may have been high when he was in the confrontation with the police and how that might have affected his mental state. And we're also talking about the police tactics. And I think the thing that's been different about this trial so far is that we have seen the blue wall crack. This has not been a case of police officers getting up on the stand and trying to come to their colleague's defense. They have been pointing out that this was police work gone awry, that these were not approved tactics, and Derek Chauvin may be forced to fall on the sword for this one. I mean, for his actions, of course, but...
Oh, definitely. I mean, by the looks of it so far, most of the testimony has been fairly damning, right? But as you said, this is strictly like the one side so far. But to see police and other legal experts, let's say, and the chief of police himself getting up, and he distanced himself from Chauvin and the others right away, fired them right away. Mm-hmm. And that you had said off the top of the show, talking about the thin blue line and all that and the wall of silence, like this is a game changer in that respect, where it's like that wall is, if it isn't cracked, it's definitely fallen down a bit, because the evidence presented, it's almost indefensible, right? You can't, if there was no film footage, it would just be purely witnesses, but it's fairly clear, not only from the visual evidence, but from what people have testified. Mm-hmm. who know these things about, you know, restraints and how police should act and whatnot, that Floyd wasn't resisting, that, you know, whether he was on anything or not doesn't matter. If you're somebody who passes a counterfeit 20, it's supposed to be like a ticket a summons, right? You don't end up with an officer with a knee on your neck. What do they call it? Positional asphyxia, where they like choke the air out of you to get you to comply. And some of the defense arguments too, it's the usual, like, well, they were afraid of the bystanders and, oh, Floyd probably had a bad heart. Yeah. The young woman who was filming and the 60-year-old guy. And it's like, yeah, they were afraid of them, where they've got this giant of a man down with four people. Right. Bad heart. Like, it's just seemingly ridiculous stuff. And we're free to talk about this because this case was taking place in Canada. We probably couldn't, you know, talk about it as freely as we do. But when somebody says they can't breathe, like however many times it was, I think it may have been upwards of 30, and all the dialogue, which has been repeated, but also kind of preserved, memorialized what he said. You know, you can't, there's no way that Chauvin is going to walk away from this at all. Like, there's the list of charges, but you know, something is going to stick, and it has to, it absolutely has to, because not only if it doesn't, will Minneapolis and lots of places explode, but that's not why. If you're somebody that, you know, follows or looks at these kinds of things, it's like it's so obvious that things not only have to change, but the way this went down was like, it's typical though. This is not a single case. You know, it's not a singular thing. This is the type of policing that has gone on in America for years and years and years. And I would extend that to Canada too, and other places in the world, that there are incidents like this where the people just walk away, and that may, but probably will stop with this case. I believe.
I will be slightly more pessimistic. I won't say there's no way he can walk. I think it's very, very unlikely he will walk. But I mean, I saw a political cartoon where it was like a pressure cooker it was open, and it had like the jury of this trial inside the pressure cooker. And I think that is a pretty apt metaphor, that there is a lot of pressure on these jurors to come back with a decision that I won't say suits the offense, but I mean, frankly, I don't think there's probably going to be in many people's minds any punishment that's enough for Derek Chauvin, but to at least return a verdict that will see him, you know, lose his freedom to some degree. If he were to walk entirely, or to be acquitted, or to be convicted on like a lesser charge or something, it's going to be really hard to stop that grand societal outrage you were alluding to. I think people are half expecting it too. I think the more concerning parts of this are a little bit on the outside. The chief of the Minneapolis police, who, like you said, Arredondo, he fired the police officers. But I mean, there are little bits like in his testimony where he said it wasn't the police, it wasn't his colleagues that drew his attention to the video. It was members of the community who said, hey, have you seen this video? So it wasn't a matter of like the police internally understanding the gross misuse of power committed by Chauvin and his fellow officers here. It was members of the police chief's own community coming forward and saying, you need to see this video. Now, may have that changed as a result of everything that's come after? Perhaps. I am not going to put a tremendous amount of faith that this enterprise that has been allowed to get away with so much for so long has learned any kind of permanent lesson. And it certainly seems like from Chauvin's in court demeanor that he seems to have learned any lessons either. And the fact that they're pushing like, oh, Floyd was on drugs, he was a threat, we were worried about all the other people around, it just, you know, the arguments are all kind of rather tired and ludicrous. So,
Well, I mean, there's been a lot about Floyd's backstory, but Chauvin had, I think it was upwards of 22 complaints against him over his career, which I think was less than 20 years. And it was usually people with nonviolent offenses, traffic offenses, which is along the lines of pushing a counterfeit $20 bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly from people of the global majority, which is how we refer to BIPOC now, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Non-white. There was one comparison made with Chauvin to somebody compared him to Dirty Harry in terms of his style, yeah. Not liked by his colleagues. This is the kind of stuff you have to dig for a bit and it will all come out. But beyond this leans into the bad apples theory. They like to say, well, there's some bad apples, but cops aren't all bad. Structurally, mm-hmm. they completely, and I guess we're going to talk about this a bit when we talk about the military as well, that mm-hmm. they absolutely need to change. And I just want to sort of deviate a bit from the discussion because it came out today. I think I saw it last night about the police in, where was that? In Ottawa, that mm-hmm. conversation that was overheard between the cops who were white and talking about how, the white man's days are done.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is a different police force in a different location in North America, but it's like, seriously, you're going to use that kind of language and have this discussion amongst yourselves in light of everything that's going on in the world? That's deep cultural police situation when you hear something like that, right? That, mm-hmm. that it goes across not just North America, but I think in lots of places in the world. They need to take a serious look at themselves. If this is it's a cultural problem deep to the core is going on here, rather than just, oh, this guy's bad or that guy's bad or this guy had a bad record. And it's always guys, right? Generally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So unless they can reexamine these, which are colonial holdover institutions, they really mm-hmm. are, deeply. And if it means tearing it apart, then they need to do that. Or, you know, this will continue. It's Rodney King. It's, you name the names. The list of names is long.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So.
Well, I mean, I imagine Chauvin's record's going to come into this at some point. But in his career as a police officer, he had 18 complaints. Two ended in disciplinary action. There was a letter of reprimand in his file. He was involved in 3 police shootings, one of which was fatal. So it's not, I mean, in Chauvin's case, it wasn't a matter of if he was going to end up here. I think it was a matter of time, and it'll be interesting to see how the prosecution uses that, because they haven't actually seemed to, and I'm quoting legal experts watching the trial here, they have not seemed to make too many flubs in running their playbook, but we'll have to see how that turns out. We're going to take a break here and come back with the rest of the news. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Summertime song, fall on the apple. Lord, there goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul.
Direct from our in-house Whammer Jammer list, our Royal Cat Records pick of the week. Royal Cat Records, 21 Mac Donnell, pick up only these days
mm-hmm.
and in these times.
And that song is on a red vinyl remastered album called Assembly by Joe Strummer. And the song was Johnny Appleseed. Lots of people Johnny Appleseeding it these days, making the most of the lockdown or the shutdown or the clampdown or the meltdown or whatever we're in now. So,
is it called red vinyl because it's actually red? It's like color red?
Yes. That it's funny enough, the picks 2 weeks in a row have been red vinyl. It seems to be the thing. I should find out about it. Maybe I'll contact our Raw Cat friends and say, what's the deal with a red vinyl?
What's Maybe it's got the algae deal? In it
or something. I don't know.
What's the deal with red vinyl?
Maybe black vinyl is becoming rare or red vinyl is organic. I don't know. No idea.
Is Unless vinyl
it sounds good, I'm in. So
is vinyl it. Organic? We'll find out after the break. No, we're not that show. So we talked about police misconduct in Minneapolis, but there is misconduct closer to home, and it's in the Canadian Forces. The chief of staff for the Canadian Forces was a man named Jonathan Vance. He stepped down in February. He announced last year he was stepping down, and then that went to effect in February. Shortly after he stepped down, it came out that he had been inappropriate allegations, let's just say. This hasn't been proven in court. It was alleged that he was inappropriate with two female subordinates. He was replaced by a man named Art McDonald. And literally, he did not finish a month as the chief of defense staff until he was accused of being inappropriate with a subordinate. So now there's a thing happening in Ottawa. They're trying to figure out how to proceed, how much misconduct, how much inappropriate behavior is in the Canadian Forces, what role the Minister of Defense should take, whether or not the Minister of Defense was aware of this long before the comments made the press. It is a mess, and it is really sadly under the wire here.
Yes, sadly for sure. And it's a recurring mess and not a new mess, but it is the current administration's or government's job to at least attempt to clean it up. But the way it's looking in terms of how deeply involved they were and how much they wanted to be involved is what's subject to question of this current committee, which, as I always say, you know, it's Canada, let's have a committee and that'll fix it. That's not what's going to fix it. But yeah, it is. It's odd that Sejan, Minister of Defense, is saying, you know, well, who knew what when? And there was this, I guess it was coming from the ex-Privy Council, saying that I tried to tell him this, but he didn't want anything to do with it. And that seems to be their way, there being the government's way of claiming that they didn't know anything. But it, through other channels, somebody else, I think it may have been Sejan's chief of staff, knew about something that was going on in 2018. It's almost not, let's not call it pillow talk, but sort of that like behind the scenes, behind the curtain talk. It's like, did you hear about what happened with so-and-so? There's a lot of that going on rather than a straight and direct channel to say who is able to do something about this, right? Is it hands off? Should it go to the Privy Council? Should the minister be able to decide directly as to what's going on? That would be my view. Would be like, you need to get involved with this rather than just kind of pass it off, which seems like what happened. But what's coming out of this, and it was the, I think it's the current military ombud, I can't remember his name, his comment was that the system's broken. And that's probably the most telling comment so far to come out of this. I'm not, how much longer is this committee going to go on? I'm not exactly sure. Do you know? Or is it just like another week or two, or it's probably an ongoing process. And I guess with COVID is making things difficult, but we need to, and I remember this from when it happened in around 2015, there's already been a report on this. And I think it came out of the Russell Williams case, Russell Williams, somebody else in the military who not only assaulted women, but killed women as well. And is in jail for a while, I think. I can't remember the exact details on Williams. It doesn't matter. But there was a report came out of that as well. And there was a ton of recommendations. The Deschamps report, it was called, after the person that wrote it. That, and one of her main comments was that sexual misconduct is endemic meaning it is like a permanent fixture in the armed forces, and sweeping changes are required. And what's needed, as I said, the same with the talking about the police earlier, cultural change, structural change is required, not another committee and not another report to sit to get dusty. If none of that happens, then this is going to continue. And a lot of what's happened are historic allegations 20, 30 years ago with people that were afraid to speak out, not unlike what we saw in Hollywood and in other places, right? Mm-hmm. It's coming out now because in this era, let's call it the Me Too era, that this is all surfacing when you've got entrenched organizations like the military and the police and the RCMP who have also had their own set of problems, then that's where this is at, right?
Well, I mean, there was the one allegation against Vance where he was contacted by like a subordinate, like he was a major general at the time. So he was like near the tippy top of,
yep.
It's because of the
you're not making light of it,
Trump thing, but you know, he was near the top, and he was contacted by a woman who's like near the lowest levels of the forces. And she's like saying, she's wondering like, how can I get ahead? I want career advice. And he's like, great, why don't we like head down to a clothing optional resort and we'll like really have it out. And it's like, in your mind, was that appropriate? I mean, he says he doesn't remember making that comment, and I can't imagine why someone would make it up. But it's just, it's gross, it's obscene. It's like you have someone who's like interested in career advancement in the Canadian forces, which is something we should be encouraging, especially for women, since as has been acknowledged, the head of the Canadian, like the top of the Canadian forces, is, you know, an old white boys club. But that was the immediate react. It's like, you as a female subordinate are a sex object, and me being a general, you know, I don't have to take you seriously. And that seemed to be okay. And it was okay enough that it was allowed to lay fallow for 20 years before it broiled to the surface. And it didn't broil to the surface through channels, keep in mind, either. It broiled to the surface in a media investigation from Global News. So, it's a mess just on the surface of it, but it's a mess that is not getting worked out through those proper channels, especially with Sajen saying, like, oh, I can't look at evidence. The ombuds comes to him and says, like, hey, there's some serious allegations. And he's like, no, I can't look at it. Because as soon as I look at it, I'm involved. Like, I'm in the chain of custody. I'm in the chain of evidence. And it's like, dude, what are you even talking about? You're the minister of defense. The workplace conduct of people under your command is totally in your wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And then the flip side of it too is like, it's inappropriate for you as the Minister of Defense to deal with this, but it's appropriate for all of this to get aired out in almost exclusively in the press, as it has now. It's crazy.
Yeah, but I think what's most telling about that with Sejong is that he is ex-military, right? He is somebody that has come from inside the house.
Yeah.
So to me, the military house. So I think that seems to be the way that they deal with these things, right? As if, you know, not like don't ask, don't tell. That's probably an inappropriate way to describe it. It's like, I don't want to know about this because then once I know about this, I'm responsible. And, you know, because he's in a different realm now, the political realm, that it's obviously affecting him whether he wanted it to or not. But part of the other political angle or political problem with this as well is that is the vetting process? How does this person end up in charge of Operation Honor? How does Vance end up in charge of something that is supposed to quash the exact thing that he is allegedly been involved with in the armed forces? It's like the whole who polices the police. You can't have this. And we've seen vetting issues as well a lot with Julie Payette, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how many other places or areas in the government where it's like they didn't really do the homework on these people, because had they done that, it would have become clear that Vance was a problem, that McDonald was a problem, and who was the third one? You talked about him too. The third allegation, the most recent one, the vice admiral, right?
Right. Yeah.
Who is on indefinite leave as well. And the, what do they call? They're our equivalent of the NCIS, the Forces National Investigation Service or whatever, checking into him as well. So tip of the iceberg stuff. These guys have been around for a long time. So somebody should know something about them if they've been able to move up the ranks. But if they've moved up the ranks, it has to be through the ranks, because if these are historic allegations, these weren't high-ranking people when these things happened, right? They may have been officers, but they weren't the top dogs, right? So,
well, it doesn't start. You get promoted to general. You don't get promoted to general and decide you're going to be an a-hole and treat your female subordinates.
Unless you already are.
I mean, it's baked in the cake. You don't just become. Yeah. Like a sexual predator. It's a process, you know.
Allegedly.
Sorry,
saying unless you are allegedly. I'm just covering my own right there.
But I mean, at the same time, though, the PMO famously passed over Vance for like a high level position in NATO too, which is like apparently the presiding incident that made Vance decide to retire and to leave the forces entirely. This was in 2018, and then in 2019 he announces he's stepping down. So at some level, and this again, this hasn't been thoroughly vetted, this is just my supposition about everything that's happened, just at some level I think there were some people who knew that he was a problem, and having him as head of defense staff in country was one thing. Putting him out there internationally at NATO was something else. And then he decided to pack up his tent and leave. So there are some serious questions that need to be answered about who knew what when. And it could be like the Payette thing. Because we know one of the things we know, which is a good analogy, that she, you know, we know that she left a pile of human wreckage in her wake before she got to the governor general's office, and people knew, but you know, these things get ignored, they get pushed to the side, what have you. So who knew what when, and how are these people able to make it all the way up the chain of command? Meanwhile, you have people like Lieutenant Colonel Eleanor Taylor, who, one of the highest ranking women in the forces. She packs up her tent and quits and says, you know what, this has been a part of this business for a long time. These allegations, these accusations of misconduct, I've lived with it. I know others who've lived with it. I can't take it anymore, even in this moment where we're kind of sort of reckoning with it. So what else is out there? It's not just these guys. What else is yet to come, and how do we find it, and how do we get to the bottom of it?
Absolutely.
All righty. That brings us to this man, and unless you're like really politically inclined, you probably haven't heard the name Matt Gaetz, but you've probably seen his face. He is
if you watch Saturday Night Live, you know who he is.
Yeah, he's a Florida congressman who is basically a Trump booster. He is in Congress to boost Trump and Trumpism. He's made his entire career about that. He has zero legislative accomplishments, and keep in mind that the Republicans were in charge of Congress for 2 years while Donald Trump was president. He was elected in 2016, the same year as Donald Trump. But he has no legislative record. His days and nights seem to be I don't know, being a troll. He famously went to Wyoming after his colleague and his, frankly, his boss, his party's leader, Liz Cheney, voted to impeach. He went to her district and said she's got to go, and he went with Donald Trump Jr. Now Matt Gaetz is in trouble, and this story, and it seems like every night there's a new facet to it that gets reported in. I mean, the New York Times has been kind of leading the way, but also CBS News and Politico have been on top of it, too. Not Guelph Politico, the OG Politico.
And Guelph Politico, too, right? Of course.
I don't cover Matt Gaetz a lot on Guelph Politico. But it is disturbing to a lot of allegations of sex trafficking, of having relationships with minors. And like the big one last night was taking trips to Bahamas And let me see if I get this right, with a marijuana entrepreneur and hand surgeon, where it seems like the Matt Gaetz the entrepreneur and hand surgeon paid for the trip, paid for accommodations on the trip, and paid for the sex workers that they took with them on the trip. Again, these are allegations. Nothing has been proven, but it seems to indicate Matt Gaetz is at the very least hanging out with some scuzzy people, if not being an utter and complete scuzzball himself.
Yeah. And it's the beauty of us talking about American politics. We can say certain things that we couldn't say about Canadians, but yeah, be wary of anyone that likes the islands, specifically islands that are out on their own, like Nygaard and Epstein and these types like Matt Gaetz, who looks like Matt Damon whacked with a frying pan. I think something like that, right? Maybe I shouldn't get that personal about the guy, but it's like, he looks like somebody. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, this high order dirtbaggery stuff, right? I'm just letting loose here. So in terms of the allegations that are going on, he is, of course, blaming Biden. It's yep. Biden's fault that this is happening. But of course, this came up under this all started under Trump. This initial investigation yep. into a political pal of his in Florida, I think his name was Greenberg, right? Mm-hmm. Who was also traveling these circles and along the same lines. And out of this came like Gaetz is in the net as well. So he's blaming Biden, but it's actually started under Trump. And this guy was looking for a preemptive pardon when everybody was, when Trump was thinking about trying to pardon his family and himself and whoever else. And what's his name? Joe Exotic. Supposedly yeah. Gaetz was shaking the tree as well to see if he can get a pardon as well, because he knew that he probably, at least it would seem, knew that this was coming, that he was in the CAC. So it stands to reason that this guy is problematic. But did you happen to see this? There was a video with him speaking to Tucker Carlson. I think it was this week, mm-hmm. another mm-hmm. all-star of
another of beauty realm, of someone,
right? It's
said.
Tucker Carlson. Yeah. And Gaetz was trying to draw him into it, right? He's saying yeah. that, well, I'm not the only one on the screen who's falsely accused of a terrible sex act. And Carlson's like trying to do this whole, that's the weirdest interview I've ever had. But then you right. think, it's Tucker Carlson. Is it possible that? So he's just throwing this doubt out, and he's kind of taking out people that should be his allies along the way, right? Mm-hmm. But there was, I saw something this morning, fellow Florida congressman, I think his name is David Jolly. He was mm-hmm. in the Republicans, but he's like disowned them because of all of this type of stuff. Said that Gaetz has to, quote, shut up, get a lawyer, and resign. Mm-hmm. And this is like we'd call him a fellow conservative. He's not a resigned, like an official Republican anymore. But this is somebody who was in that realm saying, like, look, you have to like gear down and lawyer up, because this isn't going to get any better for you. Because he does seem like one of those guys. The more that he talks about everything or tries to cover what looks like happened, it's not helping him at all.
Well, I mean, you have to keep in mind, too, Gaetz is a legacy. His father, Don Gaetz, is a rich lawyer who was also the president of the Florida Senate. He's a long-time guy in politics. Oh, this is my favorite part of this. Matt Gaetz grew up in the Truman Show house. They shot the Truman Show in his house.
Oh, wow. How's that for the fact of
Yeah, so that's my favorite part of this. And almost, actually, like the least scuzzy factoid in all this. This guy, Joel Greenberg, it's worth marinating on him, because he's part of this like similar culture, this like frat boy culture that seems to permeate Florida politics, especially, but it also affects young male Republican politics as well. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, there are people like Madison Cawthorn, the North Carolina congressman who, you know, recently had allegations about how he would take women out for drives, and if they didn't, if they didn't show any interest in him, he would, you know, get mad and drop them off. And this was during his one semester of college, by the way.
There's a recurring theme there as well.
But also, Madison Cawthorn is someone who has made the point of, like, I am not in Congress to legislate. He's he hired a staff that is all communications. So normally when you are a member of Congress, you hire, yeah, you hire comms people, you hire constituency people, you hire legislative people because you're supposed to be there to legislate. But Madison Cawthorn is like, no, I'm here to troll, and that is all I'm here to do. So, but he is like the next phase of the evolution in coming down from Matt Gaetz. But Greenberg, Rachel Maddow had a great sort of Cliff Notes version of his career.
That's what's required. Yeah. Yeah.
He was elected tax collector in this area in Florida. I think it was in the Orlando area. And of course it's America, so like literally every
position. They elect tax collectors, right? It's dog catcher tax collector, yeah.
So he's elected tax collector. He spends tax money, taxpayer money on arming his staff and like with body armor and guns. He makes it so that you can pay your taxes with Bitcoin.
Oh, he's that guy. Yeah.
He hired people in his wedding party to work at the office. And he was stealing identities because part of the role of the tax collector's office in Florida is if you move to Florida from out of state and you want to get a new Florida license, you go to the tax collector's office and they make the switch for you. But he was stealing people's out-of-town or out-of-state licenses, taking their information and putting his picture on new licenses. And he ends up – he's currently on trial, or he's awaiting trial, for 33 charges, including financial crimes, stalking – because there was somebody, a Democrat, who was going to run against him as tax collector, and he started stalking that person. Identity theft and trafficking minors. And there are pictures of Matt Gaetz. I mean, again, there are only allegations to get Matt Gaetz right now. But this guy is going to court for all of this stuff. And there are tons of pictures of him with hanging out with Matt Gaetz at the White House and at Trump events. It's like, you know,
how is there not a connection, right?
Right. Like, suppose for a moment Matt Gaetz is completely 100% innocent, but still, you are indicted by the company you keep, and Matt Gaetz kept company with some of the most disgusting people.
It's like Trump and Epstein and Prince Andrew. But then again, where are the Q people in this? This is exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Sex crime and trafficking in minors, and that, you know, anybody that has any allegation about transporting somebody over state lines, watch out for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody who has that in their MO anywhere, you need to be wary of that person, because that is like, you're doing that for a reason, because somebody, whoever this person is legal on this side of the line, right?
Well, that's another great piece of this too, because there was a bill in 2017 it was some sort of statement about human sex trafficking. It was like 400 and some odd to one that the bill passed. Guess who the one that didn't vote for it was?
Oh, was it Gaetz?
It was Gaetz.
Whoa.
One person in Congress voted against the anti-human sex trafficking bill, and it was Matt Gaetz. And you got
to wonder. That's pretty glaring, I would say. Didn't know that one. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a specimen.
He
is it fair to say that? I don't know.
I don't think that comment is out of bounds. I will rule it.
Matt Damon was pretty bad. I apologize to Matt Damon for that. I think it was actually Colin Jost that made the comparisons. Like, he looks like me, but he went through like a meat grinder or something. I don't know. Doesn't matter what Matt Gaetz looked like, you know, a dirtbag's a dirtbag.
I will argue that
alleged dirtbag.
I will argue that Colin Jost is to comedy what Matt Gaetz is to legislating, but I'll leave that there. That is it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. We're on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can listen to the show again by downloading it every Monday, from our website. You can get it at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. You can also find my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and please check out all things CFRU at cfru.ca. You can find out scheduling information
and everything that's going on in that realm. Locked down, but still open in our hearts.
We're open from home anyway, which is the beauty of technology. And speaking of technology, wonderful. DJ Sounds Good to Me is going to be here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back in your ears next Thursday at 5 for more open sources, and we will see you then.